Hello, I am Dorgan Kishu, Paladin and Dragon Rider. Thank you and for checking out episode 2 of Dragon Riders. Just blowing this, but that's all right. Anyway, the show basically is an interview show about Dungeons & Dragons dungeon masters, players, content creators, meaning, you know, anything from modules to dice or anything else. This is my co-host, Kate, and she is Dungeon Master, player, and a writer. She's actually currently working on a book based, inspired by our first campaign, our current campaign story. And my first, actually, we had two people we were going to interview, but the second person, the schedule wasn't lining up, so hopefully we'll get them in another show. So I decided, in addition to interviewing Daniel here, I'm going to actually interview my co-host a little bit so you guys know a little bit about her. So we will begin with Daniel. Daniel I joined the Twitter D&D community in 2017, so when I got into 5e. He has been a supportive and encouraging, one of the most supportive and encouraging people that I've actually been exposed to well on in the community, and so I really appreciate you. And now I will let you talk about yourself a little bit in regards to D&D.
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me. I appreciate it very much. So yeah, let's see, how can I make this rather quick. I started playing D&D the first time like almost 20 years ago. I look a lot younger than I actually am, so.
Me too, I think, I hope.
Yeah, so around like 15, 16-ish, something like that, high school, where most people are introduced to D&D. But it didn't hold up very long because it was a very haphazard group, and it was more like yeah, there's something new, let's try it out. A few of us were into it, but it very much piqued my interest, and it certainly was something that also got me into writing. But yeah, as life goes, there was not much time and or players or DMs, so there was a long stretch of no Dungeons and Dragons. And just a few years ago, one of my actual co-workers, a very good friend of mine, had a group running, and a player fell out, and he asked me if I would like to fill in the gap, which I did. The game short after ended, unfortunately, but that was enough for me to fully spark my interest and desire for D&D, basically starting me to write my own stuff and get everything together, start hoarding dice like gems and getting all the books and all that stuff. So that's basically, like, I'd say, yeah, roughly two or three, well, must be three to 4 years now, when it really kicked off full gear.
Were you always a fan of the fantasy, you know, that sort of genre? Or was there some other reason why it drew you in? Was it just the community, the gameplay, the creativity? What exactly kind of drew you way back then in high school?
Back then it was, I'd say the main things were curiosity, because I was not very much into board games or anything, or even pen and paper, I'd say board game adjacent, like that. So that was more a new thing for me, and very much the fantasy setting as a general. I'd say it shares the top spot with sci-fi in my interest.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah, that's definitely what hooked me in the first place.
Was it different the second time? Was it just, did it seem different the second time that you were, was introduced? Yeah, go ahead about that.
Definitely. Second time when I was asked by my coworker if I would fill the open slot, Critical Role was already in full swing. Basically everybody knew it. I got bits and pieces from here and there, so it was basically unable to visit any kind of social media and something like that to not be faced with D&D and its current resurgence, or renaissance, I think would be a better term, that it is having in the past few years. So I was, I wouldn't say I was already waiting for something to happen, but I think if I would not have been asked to fill the gap, maybe a few months later at the tops, I would have tried to start something myself, because I was already itching to get more into it, to try it again. So the interest never really faded.
You, I know we did something that was not recorded or anything, you and we had another person here, and you create, like, you have like created your own content, or you have like something pretty elaborate that you're working on or running, or tell me that again.
It's still work in progress. It's the past few weeks I haven't had time to do much, but I'm basically in the middle of digitalizing and editing everything that I have worked on in the past 3 or 4 years, ever since I started playing again, basically like a week after I started writing my own short stories, writing backstories for characters, plot hooks, creating magical items. All the stuff just started flowing in, and it's everywhere. I got an entire bookshelf full of ideas and half written stuff, and I'm currently trying to get it all in order, trying to make it fit into what D&D is for me, to make it work as a system. I've only run one shot with a group, and two side-by-side games with two younger players who are very interested, with whom I hope to get to play very soon again, especially as everything gets more fleshed out, and the locations, the people, and everything that's going on basically on my small island kingdom should be pretty interesting. But it is, even though it is a work in progress, I'm trying to get as much feedback as possible. So ever since I started publishing is not the right term, but telling people about it, I always said that if I ever manage to finalize it, to at least say, okay, I got my first final draft or something like that, if it should take off, I'll never charge anything for it. The worst thing I would ever do to anybody would be to publish it on, I don't know, DM's Guild or something like that, for pay what you want if somebody wanted to contribute. But the best thing I can get out of it is if people take it and make it their own, and build upon this foundation that I'm giving them, which is why I'm not trying to fill in every minuscule detail, but painting in broader strokes.
So you're gonna give this away, you're not looking to publish it or yes. Sell it?
I might publish it. I'm thinking, and I'm having had already some talks to different people and companies about how to best approach it. But if I should ever publish it, the first idea would be to publish it digitally, so that people could just download a PDF or some other format. And should it ever come to a point where I would say, okay, this is where it could be printed, then that would be something where it's okay if people, it would be print on demand. So I wouldn't go Kickstarter or anything like that. I think it would be overkill. However good it would be, I would make it print on demand, but that's still in the far future right now.
Yeah, but that's cool. Do you think that if you get a digital one out there, or if you get it, make it available to people without charging, are you thinking that the printed one might come later after you get feedback, or after you yourself have just kind of evolved it to a point where you feel like, yeah, let's go ahead and do at least the first edition print?
Both, actually. So feedback from players and other people who run it is very important to me. Currently I have the majority of it in a giant mind map, which helps me coordinate all the things and the correlations. And that what I'm currently giving away for public view and use is over on Kanka. So maybe we can later put down a link in the
Absolutely, yeah, that's what Cole used to say.
And I recently put in a change log, and even there you can see that lots of the things that I'm doing are based on feedback from others. I'm not going too much into detail there, but I'm trying to make it simple and but wholesome so that people know, okay, something has been changed, something has been added, and if it has been changed, what has been changed and why it has been changed. So it might be that first print edition, 1.0, so to speak, would come out. It would be a cumulative thing from my experience running it, going through it, and very much so the feedback from people I've run it from and others alike.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome in regards. Yeah, I can relate to. I mean, I've been going completely at my own speed. You know, I published my first one last year. I really would have loved to have published one, another one within a year, but it didn't happen because, you know, different things. But I'm just, yeah. And I think I'm not going to ever be one of these people that pumps them out unless I do. I just don't think that's going to happen. So, but Kate, were you going
to? I did have a question. It may not be on topic, but I was just interested, maybe for both of you to answer in a way. But so D&D has become a much larger community. It's been out there, you know, Critical Role is there. There's a lot of shows, there's a lot of content. But it's still a little bit of a thing where it's difficult to talk about to people, especially if you're going to do something, kind of dedicate a lot of time to it. You're going to, you know, write a book about it. You're going to do a lot of, you know, like you are doing, Daniel, dedicating so much time to doing something like this. I just think it's interesting how do we describe it to people? I know I have a difficult time exactly describing people that don't know what D&D is, kind of describing how the book that I'm writing is based off of a D&D campaign, and they're like, well, what's that? And then it just becomes kind of a interesting thing. So how do you bridge the gap between like the D&D sort of life and people that kind of understand you and sort of the outside world, so to speak? Or do you not care at all? Do you just kind of say this is what it is? And maybe for both of you to answer that.
Go first, Dan.
James, why don't you go first?
You want to go first?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, like for instance, with family, except for my mom, who's just like encourages whatever and everything. I got lucky. The cool mom, she's just kind of like, oh, she may not remember much of what I say, but she's always like listening and excited for it. But other family members, when I mention anything, it really kind of falls blank. Or they just like, there's almost no response, or worst case scenario, it would be like neat or fun, you know. But that's, you know, just for me, because it's, you know, there's some part of you that wants to be taken seriously. I think maybe not everybody's like this, but it's always, for me, it's kind of always nice when family, and some level of, depending on how, your family situation, or you kind of, people are a little bit responsive, if nothing else. Overall, like I've been a writer a pretty long time. And D&D is like everything. And then I've done some filmmaking stuff and all that. It's just been who I've been all my life. So, and I've always kind of been myself. I mean, a lot of people, you know, I was sad when I was younger, but I kind of always knew who I was. And then I just, in my 20s, I wasn't as sad. So, which is better. I got to be myself and not be as sad as I was. But it's always been such a big part of who I am. I admit that the people who respond to it the most are the people in the D&D community, especially Twitter. And there's occasions like, I grew up, I was really close. My brother and I were only 15 months apart, and I would have loved him to be into D&D, because him and I together were very imaginative. But, and I keep trying to get him to play, and it's been kind of like, it's not happening. But so that's hard. I lost my kind of one of my main creative partners, because he's just changed. And I'd say he's had kids, he's had this, but I know that there are people that are into D&D that have kids like yourself. It's like, that's not what it is. So losing him was kind of hard. General public, like I said, mainly I feel like it just kind of falls blank on people that don't really know what it is or care what it is, or like just don't take it seriously, because there's some people that just think, oh, game or toy or something I heard of when I was a kid that I was never part of. There's a lot. I mean, I could go on and on about this, but me personally, like I say, my mom is supportive. My brother is kind of on and off randomly supportive, but not really interested, I don't think. And I would, but I, for me, and that whole thing about do I care? It's not that I don't care, but I definitely am not going to let it stop me that most people just don't think much about it. And that's why the D&D, that Twitter D&D community is awesome, because you're in an area of actual enthusiasts, you know. Like Daniel, I mean, these are people that are me enthusiastic about D&D in general, and then what they do with it and what that. But that's kind of a longish, medium, shortest answer. But I'll leave it at that, because I can talk forever. How about you, Daniel?
Well, there is I think there's two kinds of people, and it generally is, and that's not exclusive for D&D. I think it is hard for hobbies or interests that are not mainstream primarily, and D&D is getting very much mainstream, but I don't think it is somewhere where something like football or any other sport is at the moment, and I don't think it will be for quite some time. Other hobbies like chess, everybody knows chess. That's, yeah, it's a game, but everybody knows chess, so it's easier to talk to people about that. And there's two kinds of people. I think there's people who don't know about it and don't care about it if being approached by someone who wants to invite them into a game or thinks they might be interested for whatever reason, collaboration in creative processes whatsoever. And then there's people who may have heard about it but are not interested into it. There should be a third group, but I think the third group is the people who already are involved into it. That is people who either did not know about it, but got to know about it and went off the rails with it, just like me, were just sparked and it just developed their own life and took over the person who they formerly were. And then there's people who from the get-go knew about it, especially those who are like a generation before me or us, who grew up with it when it first came out, who lived through the dark times of when it was not to be spoken about and all the bad and stupid stuff that went on like 30 years ago. I don't need to go into detail about that. Everybody who knows D&D knows about it. Fun thing, most people don't know, which I want to put in here, there is an interesting movie featuring Tom Hanks where D&D is basically summoning the devil. So go check that out if you haven't. But about approaching people, for most people, it is hard to grasp the concept of D&D. What is it? Many people describe it as cooperative storytelling. That's just one way to play D&D. If you're running a module, it's not exactly that. It's basically railroad, because you already have the story. You're just filling in the gaps and the things that your mind makes up when you're reading a book, the details that are not explicitly described. At least that's how I see it. So I think it was Matt Mercer who said this, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact words here, but I agree full-heartedly here. When approaching someone who has no idea what D&D is, and to a great extent it is something that happens together, but it is based upon the individual decisions of the players and the DM, you just ask them a simple question, be it like, okay, there is a door and it is closed, what do you want to do? Yeah. And the person responds with whatever. I try to open the door, I check if it is locked, why am I in front of a door, I think about why I'm actually here. Whatever it is, that person is playing. That person is making a decision, their own decision, about what they want to do. And if you think about a D&D game, whatever situation you put a player into, it is the DM creates a situation, the players are in this situation, and he asks them what they want to do with it. There doesn't have to be some sort of resolution. It also can be just like failing forward. But it is always a give and take. It is always based on response, except for those very few games where it is hardcore railroading. Basically, the DM tells the players what's happening. Roll your dice and we see if you survive or not. But that's not D&D for me, exactly. It is some sort of D&D, but it is very restrictive. Not a way I like to play, actually.
Yeah. Thanks for answering that question. I think it's just interesting to me because, for me, I was a person who was very much like, when I heard D&D, it wasn't just that I had never heard of it. It was that I pushed myself away from it. I'm like, oh no, this isn't something that I want to be a part of. You know, like I was like, and like right away I had my guard up, I guess. I don't know the right word, but I had resistance to it right away. But the more and more I was exposed to it, the more and more, it, like you said, Daniel, it kind of just drew you in and sort of took you over as a being, I guess. So I just think it's interesting because I think a lot of people could benefit from D&D, but there's an initial concept of it, or there's an initial kind of stereotype of who you kind of have to be a part of D&D, or to dedicate a good amount of your time to it. And that you can't be, you know, you're this like nerdy guy that drinks Mountain Dew or whatever, you know, the stereotypical nerd guy, you know, and you can't just be the diverse community that the D&D community actually is. And so I think there's a lot of misconceptions. And so I for the most part, have a really hard time talking to people about it. You know, I have a hard time putting myself out there. And, you know, I kind of call myself like a closet D&D player because it's a little bit scary to like talk to people about it a little bit. Even though it's well known, you know, you're scared of judgment in a way.
I fully agree. Something that you said and something that I just remembered looking at your background especially. As far as we've been talking about D&D, that was mainly about playing the game. But I think D&D is much more than that. And that is the main thing why, especially people like us, experience it as being so inclusive and so diverse. Because Dungeons & Dragons is not just a game. Dungeons & Dragons is for people who seek the thrill of adventure, who play the games, who read the modules, read the books and the stories, be it the Dragonlance novels or the Choose Your Own Adventure books from back in the day, or the new ones that have been done by Matt Forbeck, or people who just enjoy the art, people who enjoy the community, the creative ideas, who just like to write fantastic stories, who get their imagination sparked. So there is, I think there's a place for whatever you want to be, regardless of who you are, there is a place for you in Dungeons & Dragons. It is just very, very, very hard, and let's face it, Wizards of the Coast is not doing the best job right now about it, of bringing this to the people. They are going step by step, and then they're taking steps back, and there's pros and cons, and that's an entire different topic, actually. But I think they're on the right track, generally, but they could do more to make people understand easier that Dungeons & Dragons is not just toys and tossing dice and buying overpriced miniatures from a certain company. It is way more. It is expressing yourself in whatever way. Just, I think, to put it short, Dungeons & Dragons is being creative, however you look at it. If you're a player, if you're a dungeon master, if you're a painter, if you're a writer, it is all a creative outlet. And I think that would be a great tagline. So Wizards of the Coast, I'm not charging you for that. That's a free advice. Make it your tagline.
Yeah, you know, the Wizard of the Coast, there's two things. Okay. And Critical Role somehow usually ends up at Brandon Bean Mission. It's not a bad word. I think Critical Role is, I actually really enjoy it. But one thing that I noticed early on, because I got into, I know they started in 2015, I think in 2017 was when I got back into D&D, and I knew about Geek and Sundry for a longer time. And to be honest with you, I was shocked, maybe I just missed, that they hadn't already kind of had D&D on there. I mean, it was a geek channel, not to, you know, out of whatever geek is. It was a Geek and Sundry. So, but I kind of was shocked that they didn't have a regular D&D game on there. And if there was, maybe I missed it. So when I actually officially rejoined the community in 2017, when I really started to be on it all the time, I was like, and then Critical was on there and Critical, and they were kind of taking off. And I was like, yeah, I was always surprised that they didn't kind of do that. And then I know Felicia Day was the one who created that channel. And I know she's the one that said, hey, you guys should, you know, show your game online. And that's how that kind of how it all began. But like, my point by bringing this up is that I was a little shocked that it took that long for Geek and Sundry to have a successful, just a D&D show that was on maybe they did more of it than I realized. And maybe it was just the particular group they got together that clicked, or the timing that it happened. But with Wizards of the Coast, it's interesting because Wizards of the Coast, and it's part of the reason why I created this show, I just don't think there's enough people, players and dungeon masters, that you get to watch and hear them talk. Maybe, I don't know, maybe people don't want to hear from other players or other DMs, but that's basically largely what this show is about, plus content creators. Because with content creators, my experience is that people tweet about it and all that, but they should get an opportunity to actually talk about it. And not to mention, they are generally players or DMs, or they became just content. I mean, there are people that just create content. But yeah, Wizards of the Coast, I don't want to say they play it safe in the way that they do everything, but it's kind of a play it safe kind of world. People are afraid to.
They have a tight grip on their IP, I would say, to put it in business terms. So yeah, I think there's lots of people, especially Chris Perkins, who would be, if they could, if the company structure allowed it, who would be even more inclusive, because they are very inclusive. They are giving content creators in a general lots of opportunities to contribute and to become part of Wizards of the Coast or to get contracted or whatever. But I think especially people like Chris Perkins, if they could, they would open up additional or different channels to give the community more possibilities to interact. But given the background that I come from in professional regard, I know that what you want to do and what people would like to have are not the same as what you can do, because there are legal boundaries, there are financial boundaries that you just cannot as a single person combat. It's fighting against windmills. And I think that the DMs Guild and stuff like that are a very good way, a very good start, a good foundation for people to get into it. And I think this is going to evolve into something much bigger with like this format that you're running right now, James, and other channels who have already maybe more established geek channels, stuff like that. And no matter how big you are, I think that all those things, if they come together, and they will to some extent and do to some extent, that there will be some kind of evolution in this D&D renaissance in the next few years that will see a greater platform, not all those many different small to middle-sized platforms that people are using. There are, I think, 15 to 20 different platforms that people can use to keep track of their timelines and characters and locations and whatnot. And there's so many different things, and that is good. Diversity is great. It's good for business, and it's good for people to have a choice. But I think there's going to be something big coming in the next few years, and all I'm hoping is that whoever is behind it will make this grounded in the community and not grounded in a company.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I'm hoping, because I have no idea how to do it, because otherwise I would have quit my job years ago.
You're right, though, because it's, I will say in general, the tendency is that when something gets big or blows up in any business, that it sometimes it loses its soul, of course, you know, money, more money, more this, more that. But also, yeah, I'm not finding
just
the words.
Corporate,
but it gets corporate. Yeah, it gets, and you know, and I, not the critical world. Once again, that's what I'm sure they're dealing with. I think one of the things they have fortunate going for them, and it's just, is that there's eight of them, and most maybe that would be really hard for a lot of groups of eight people, but they happen to already know each other before this all happened, and so they all do roles in the company, and so far it's working for them. I don't know if at some point it's going to become too much, but yeah, you're right. If what you're talking about, you're right. I sense the next few years something's going to break and something better platform or a platform. And then is it, like you said, is it coming from community or is it coming from just making more money or whatever? And then it becomes quickly, it becomes maybe something big and not functional, or something big for a while and collapsing. But it's really hard to, but you're, I do sense that something more is going to happen because D&D already took off.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good, Gil.
Oh no, I just wanted to say one thing is that I really like talking with you, Daniel, because it's hard for me to describe it exactly, but I take D&D really seriously. And so when I say that, you know, people are like, what are you talking about? But I really take it seriously. Like when I play as my character, I take it seriously. When I DM, I take it seriously. As I'm writing my novel or novels, I'm taking it seriously, and it's something I really do take seriously, and I can tell that you take it seriously too. And there is this kind of like taking it seriously that's a little bit hard to describe sometimes, but
I think it's going to sound kind of, I don't know what it's going to sound, profound, not profound, but it's going to sound something. Because creating has been something that I've always done ever since I was a kid, and it kind of evolved to this, whether it was whatever, writing or doing some Shakespeare or filmmaking or D&D. I almost want to say I've always taken myself seriously, and that might be, I don't know, maybe that's because of my mom. I don't know. I doubt it. I think she takes herself serious enough. But for whatever reason, I feel like I knew who I was at a young age. Like I said, whether I was sad or I was happy, I at least knew who I was. And I feel like D&D for me is just being myself. I don't mean just playing. I mean everything. Like, I am into it. It is, for me, almost one of the ultimate. It's like you can create anything. You can imagine anything. You know, I really felt, because I was pursuing film a little while back, D&D for me was like this place where you could create everything, especially as a DM. You're writing, you're doing all these things. And it was like almost like the ultimate film school, to work on characters, to work on story, to work on, and then how people react to it and all that stuff. But I 1000% do take D&D seriously, but I think it's that I'm more that I take myself seriously. And I've always thought of it, because I mean, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien exists. These books were huge. They're, you know, people resonated gigantically. Artists are real, and they're important. And I know that on some level, it's like, I'm sure a lot of us just kind of feel like we're not mainstream, or we're not truly included, or we're kind of, oh, they're just artists, as opposed to, you know, so. But yeah, I can say she definitely takes her character very seriously. And I can tell, like you say, this is very serious for you. And I think it is awesome. But let's continue forward, and I'll edit myself if I need to. Okay, so I'm very excited to check out your stuff in one way or another. Whatever of it I, you know, am exposed to or get a chance to be around. It's because you seem... you're enthusiastic about D&D, because you seem serious, because you have obviously, you know, a great imagination. And so it's like really exciting to me to like get to partake in it in one form or another, whether I'm watching it, reading about it, being a player in it, whatever. So I know I'm definitely curious about your journey as it goes. no hurry about anything, but I am, the more that I know about it, the better for me. You know, you're just one of those people that I am, that I'm definitely interested in either playing with or being using your world or familiar with your world and that kind of stuff. But
because they're both sad and generally I agree with your notion about the seriousness of the hobby. It is kind of like how do you say, it's kind of a mark, because for most people it is just escapism, just a game, it is just writing, it is just playing. But like Kate said before, and I couldn't help but smile, because that is probably the most prolific problem I have to engage other people into it. As soon as I get to talk to new players, to people who I think they might be interested in it, I'm not like, hey, would you like to play? Because I like you and I think you're an interesting person. So I'm just like, so, hey, I've got this, blah, 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 blah. And they get snowballed with all my enthusiasm. And I think that's something that might push people away, because it gives away a wrong impression to some extent. It is very important to me because it gives me a way to escape. It gives me a way to be creative in very different ways. But it also can seem, because of this, very intimidating to new people, because they might get the impression, and I'm guilty of it, to giving people the impression that the things that I do based on my enthusiasm, which they don't know about actually, besides gauging how I talk about things, they think that they're expected to do the same things to at least some extent. Right. And getting into a hobby, just imagine you were into getting like, playing soccer, to pick up my example from before. And you were talking to a pro player who was playing World Series, and it was like, yeah, and then you've got press tours and you've got interviews and this and that. And people just like say, I just want to kick some balls.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's, right. That's, that might shy people away. So that's why I'm trying to take myself out of the equation and just putting out the link there and just telling people about it, just to go take a look. If you have questions, I'm here. I set up an entirely new email address so that I can filter out if anything comes out of it, to keep it away from all the other spam mails and whatnot. But I'm trying to not be part of how people perceive it. So that people can experience it on their own terms, like reading a book. If you read a book, there's nobody telling you how to interpret the things that are written there. It is your imagination doing it. And I'm trying to give people, as far as possible, the same thing, to have them have something, and it's just a foundation. Build your own home on it.
That's really true. I have like, there's a company who produces independent books, and the books are really good, third party 5e stuff, and they're pretty friendly on Twitter and everything else, but I get the sense that being social is not their thing. So if I was just to go, oh, this guy doesn't seem that approachable, or he doesn't seem that friendly. He doesn't seem not friendly, but he just doesn't seem, I don't know, engaged with the community really. But when I read his books, they're great and they're usable and they inspire me. And they're one of the companies that I, of third-party books that I would buy. There's a few that I would buy and that I know right now. And I'm not gigantically exposed, but I'm just saying that I've had to make the choice, you know what? I don't know that I don't want to buy his books just because on Twitter he seems not that into the community.
Unapproachable,
Not approachable, yeah.
Maybe he's not a people person.
Right. So yeah. I agree with you that, and I think it's cool that the fact that you're removing, yeah. And, you know, because, and I've been around D&D enough. I played in my teens, my 20s, and then I got into 5e in my 40s. But I've been around enough D&D players to know that they can intimidate and alienate people quickly, especially in further back you go. A lot of the people I was like, you know, God, I don't really, but yeah, I think that that's, I think it's better, like you said, if you need to just step back and kind of, you know, give a link and do that, you know, as opposed to trying to change yourself or pretend something you're not, or, but you want them to check out your world. You want them to, I mean, that's the thing. And, but I will also say that there are a lot of creators, I think, that are similar to you in regards to, they've got these just worlds, just loads of it, but they're not necessarily super, not saying you're not super social on Twitter. You're actually really friendly and supportive, but what you're talking about, I know what you mean as far as actually explaining it to people and all that.
They might
scare them off.
As Kate said, closet players. They might be just like, I have this whole thing in my head and I want to create out of it and I want people to share in it and to engage in it. But for whatever reasons, maybe they're just shy. Maybe they are, whatever the reasons are, maybe they just don't know how to approach people. That I know tons of people who can't talk to people they are not being introduced to. And maybe they just don't know how to take the first step. I think especially the D&D community, except for certain instances, is a very friendly and inclusive space. Of course, you will always have your black sheep. That's just what comes with diversity. You can never agree with everybody, but that's just the other side of the coin. You can't have D&D and full inclusiveness for all people of all walks of life, with all their different views of the world, with all their own agendas and ideas and whatever, and not get something you don't agree with. That just doesn't work. It's like saying, hey, I want a coin, but I only want the top side because I don't like heads. I only want tails.
That's not how it works. It's definitely what we were talking about in our first interview. We were talking with Tim and Jason. They were talking about how they have very different political views. Like on the spectrum, their political views are very different. But that they really respect each other and connect with each other because of D&D. And it is something that can bridge a gap for people. Even if they have real world differences, it can be a way for people to connect and to relate to one another, which I think is really amazing. And like you said, it's really inclusive. And it can be a platform of inclusiveness and to really bring people together. And I mean, we wouldn't be talking right now if it wasn't for D&D probably, you know, like, so it brings people together and it's, I think D&D is a beautiful thing. So, it kind of being turned into this thing that many things have been turned into. I mean, like, not to bring up something, but, you know, I'm obsessed with She-Ra, right? Obsessed with She-Ra, the show She-Ra. And I mean, the creator says one little thing that might not be correct, like viewed correctly, and they want to cancel her, you know, but what she did benefited me a lot. So it's kind of like, it's with everything. And it's at some point, I don't know what's going to happen with it, because it can only be this way for so long, that people, the actual fans or the people on social media have so much of a say in what goes on. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think that,
good.
Sorry, James. I think that plays into what I said before with the evolution that I think is going to happen. And I personally think it's going to be something that is very much community driven, because yes, it is. If everything hinges on just one person or a small group of people, everybody got skeletons in their closet. Everyone. Small ones, big ones, it doesn't matter. Everyone's got dirt on their stick. If it is something that is born out of the community, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As you said before, people can have different political views, religious beliefs, sexual orientation, whatever. It doesn't matter. They have a common ground where it does not matter. They are all the same.
Yeah. just to touch on a couple of the topics in a try to broad stroke it myself. With Matt Mercer, I don't know about this. I know when I go on YouTube, I see videos that say the Matt Mercer effect, and I don't watch them. I feel that anybody who gets a lot of popularity in anything is going to be, you know, highly scrutinized, et cetera. But I, even going back, like when I used to go through a market and there'd be a magazine about an actor and what they did and who they did or what they bought. To be honest with you, there's a part of me that doesn't want to know about the personal lives of entertainers. I can respect people, you know, not wanting someone to be on a platform because of some things they did or whatever, et cetera. It's so complicated. But my main thing was that, but like for me, like with Critical Role, I've noticed as a fan of Critical Role, it's not the reason I play D&D, I've been doing it forever. I just happen to think the main core for me about Critical Role is the friendships that these guys have. That is the core. That is my opinion, the main reason they've succeeded. And you can contribute, there's timing, I think Matt's a great, one of the best DMs I've seen. But for the most part, the friendship, you know, but I don't, and I'm not taking shots at anybody, but I don't like people that don't like people just because they're doing well. Yeah. I know there's a lot of, it's typical, you know, people are competitive or whatever, he's not so great, et cetera, et cetera. You know, far as I know, he doesn't come out and say he's the best DM in the world. In fact, says the opposite, that everybody's different, et cetera. But I think he's a good one on that. And that aside, the cancel culture thing that's happened has just been horrible. I don't know why certain people are on Twitter. I think, like, I know a lot of celebrities never even get on it. You know, I look at Mandalorian and I watched the first season. I watched the second, you know, the Baby Yoda became gigantic in the first season. Bigger, you know, may have been the biggest thing, you know, as far as like a general audience, more than just sci-fi, right? And that happens too. That's what happens too with like Critical Role. It pulls in people who aren't like purists or whatever that are just like there for this reason or that reason as opposed to I just love D&D. But then I see and I watched the first couple episodes of the second season and Baby Yoda did something that upset the masses or a lot of people or the whatevers.
I think I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, and then I saw one of the producers like doing a tweet about it, trying to like make peace with the masses. I feel that I'm not sure about this. I'm not, because I don't go focusing on this kind of thing much, but I really feel like there's this power that's been given to the trolls. And I don't think everybody's a troll. I gotta watch myself here, but you're not a troll just because you don't like something to happen. But I feel like if companies just constantly try to appease the masses, it's probably going to end bad for the show or for the different things. And I just feel that they give people too much power on Twitter. And like I said, to a degree, if I was a celebrity of some sort, I don't think I'd be on Twitter because of how badly people get treated. The cancel culture has made Twitter not a great place if you're a celebrity or if you're connected to anything that's big.
I think it's different, not to interrupt you, but I think it's different. You know, I think that there has to be a gauge where it's obviously like this person probably shouldn't be included if he's raping people or if he's doing really terrible things, you know, or if he's completely corrupt and taking money from whatever, you know. I think that there is reason to quote unquote cancel somebody, but there's no tipping point, you know. It's just like one little thing happens and it's like cancel, you know. It's like whiplash almost. There's nothing substantial.
Yeah. Right. Anyway. They can do all the good. They can do good stuff for 40 years, and we'll do one thing that some people don't like, and they try to get rid of them. Yeah.
That's just how things evolve, because as the saying goes, times are going by ever faster. Everything gets more connected. People are online all the time and get the ability to share their opinion on anything. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? It has its ups, it has its downs, but it's just like television. Was television a good invention? Well, Yeah, certainly to some extent, but it certainly had its backside, its downsides as well. So you can't eat potatoes without having to plow a garden. I mean, you will get dirty, or someone will get dirty if you want to have potatoes, and that's just what's going to happen. And yeah, cancel culture, gatekeeping, those are things that are not exclusive to Dungeons and Dragons. You have it in Warhammer, you have it in whatever it, even in sports, and it doesn't even have to be professional sports, politics. You've got it everywhere. You've got gatekeepers, you have cancel culture. That's just how the world is today. And real world things will always seep into our hobbies, because whatever we do to be creative or to escape from our daily lives, we are still based in a real world, and all those things give some, there is always some seed of what you take from your real life that will come with you. And what you make of it, that's up to everyone. There are people who take it and use it to cope with frustration or loss or grief, whatever, with anything bad that might have happened to it, and become great, renowned writers or artists, whatever, because they take this negative emotions as a conduit for their artistic expression. But it could be something positive as well. But it could be something that is, that just ends up being something positive that is being used to be expressed in a destructive way. It always depends on the person. And that is why I think it is great that D&D is very exclusive. As I said before, you can't have the good without the bad. You will always have some black sheep in your flock, and you will, people just have to learn to accept this. And here's the important part, I think, about this. You can have a herd, and in this herd, you will have your black sheep. Speaking of the community as a whole, there will be black sheep. There will be people who have views that you will never agree with. Those are not the people you have to play with. Because right. out of this entire mass of people, be it choosing players, dungeon masters, content creators, artists for something that you're trying to publish, people you're trying to collaborate with, every person gets to pick their partners. And if they don't like what they see, they pick somebody else. The important thing, at least in my opinion, is if you approach someone or being approached by someone, and that doesn't only hold true for D&D, I think that is something you can take into your daily life. But to stay on topic here, say I wanted to publish my my campaign setting. I'm done writing. I've got everything that I wanted, and I've got my publishing company, and I'm just looking for someone to do my art. And I'm just throwing out a big net saying, hey, this is what I need. This is what I'm willing to pay. I need an artist. This is about the art style that I'm looking for. Here's my contact info. Come at me. And I get 100 inquiries about cooperation. There's bound to be at least one person who will, when I look at their resume, not be something that I'm looking for, be it because they are depicting things that I don't agree with or whatsoever. I get to choose not to work with that person. But I have to choose not to be a bitch about it. That's the important part, because I can be respectful and say, hey, thanks for your interest, but your style of work is not what I'm looking for in this project. I don't have to go out on Twitter and say, hey, Mr. or Mrs. XYZ has contacting me and look up their art. How dare they offend me by even sending me an email? That doesn't do anything. I mean, I gotta have a lot of spare time and a lot of booze in me to even start fathoming this idea. I got better things to do.
Yeah.
Right on my campaign setting. Be creative. Look for people who want to work with me. Look for people who want to play with me. Enjoy my life and not being sour about people who are not like me or not what I'm expecting.
Yeah.
Which actually, if I can use this as a small transition, brings me to a great point. I am actually looking for someone to do art for me because as you two both know, my girlfriend is an artist, but she's not doing the kind of art that I'm looking for. Even though she has the talent, it's just not what she does or what she's comfortable with and what she likes to do. So it's not something I need immediately, but someone might see this. Just, I don't have any prerequisites at the moment, especially, so just holler at me.
Yeah, that's with my second, well, I did my module, Edge Adventure module last year, and my next thing is a campaign setting / adventure modules. And I'm at a point where I need an illustrator, but I haven't determined how I'm going to get the money for it yet. I didn't do a Kickstarter last time. I think we talked about this the other time we talked, but I still don't feel like I want to do a Kickstarter, even though maybe that's the right thing to do, or the best thing to do, or the quickest thing to get money. I got to figure out how I want to approach it, but I am at a standstill with HiCon and working on other stuff like the show. Will I figure out how I'm going to go about getting, because at a point where I definitely want illustrations for HiCon, and then I'll also be cleaning up what needs the writing and all that, but I know internally, and that's where I'm kind of on my own clock, but I want HiCon to look and be the way I want it, and it will be done when it's done. I'd love to get it out in the next few months. We'll have to see. I guess this might be a good time to shift over to asking Kate some questions. Did you have any, we will be doing links and all that stuff, whatever you want people to see and all that. Definitely.
I'll get you.
Send it all to me and I will put it under this video on YouTube. This will be on YouTube. And I'm trying to think, in this case, did you have any more questions for him? Right now, could always have you back another time too, of course, but. Obviously, we can talk forever.
I don't mind sticking around. So just.
Or is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Being a player, a dungeon master, or content, anything else that you want to just talk about or say?
Well, thanks again. I've been really looking forward to hanging out with you two again.
Yes, great.
As you said, we could be talking for hours on end.
All right. So maybe we'll probably have to have you on again.
We might get another chance on that. Last time we spoke, I've been mentioning a sort of workshop, which kind of adjacent in some tangent way to what you're doing here. But this hasn't really kicked off now, mostly due to time constraints and given the entire situation right now. So that will be postponed, but that is something that if it goes live, we'll very gladly have you two invited, and I hope this might be one of the cornerstones of this evolution that I've been speaking before, to get something that hopefully will start in the community. But we'll just have to wait and see, and I think it's really great that you're doing this and getting people onto this, especially since you're approaching people that are, at least in my regard, not celebrities to any extent, or minor celebrities. And I'm really thankful for having this opportunity to having some kind of platform to talk about things like that. So yeah, got to be back anytime.
Yeah, you're welcome. I definitely approached, my first guests are definitely people who I've interacted with in the few years that I've been in the Twitter D&D community, that are enthusiastic D&D people, encouraging, supportive. I don't know. I'm just going by instinct a lot right now, and I'm hoping we'll just keep on bringing people on here. All right. So, like I said, our second guest was is pushing Push Pie Fish forward to another episode, and I thought it would be not a bad idea for people to know my, forget my phone, I just can't even deal with it, figuring out how to be quiet, turning it off. Anyway, but I thought it was an opportunity for people that watch this to get to know Kate a little. We're our boyfriend, girlfriend, but that's not the main reason that she's on this show. The main reason that she's on this show is, like you, Daniel, she is a big D&D enthusiast, player, DM, and writing a book about, based on our campaign at the moment, or many books. Anyway, so I thought this was a good opportunity for us to talk to Kate a little bit about her D&D, like what she does with D&D and all that. And go ahead and talk about yourself, and we'll listen.
You want me to just talk?
No, oh, tell me about you and D&D, what you're doing, and just whatever you like.
Okay. I am a player in a campaign that you dungeon master for, I don't know how long, 2.5 years?
Just about 2 years.
2 years. And I also run a campaign with, well, when everyone's there, it's four players. And I've ran that over a little over a year. And I'm also rewriting / kind of retelling our campaign from the beginning, sort of going into the campaign, because I think the story is awesome and I wanted to share it. So that's what I'm doing.
Awesome. Yeah, so the books are going to take a while. I know, I will say I'm a writer and I've had her edit some things and she's much more detailed than me. And it's pretty high standards when it comes to writing, as far as, no pressure, but I think that you're much more of a book writer than I am. You know, I've wrote some screenplay stuff, but I've written a fantasy novel, but it's not super detailed. I mean, I just don't think I'm really good at going into all the little details. So it's just kind of my style, but.
And anything you want to know in particular, or I should talk about?
I guess how you originally became a player.
Okay. My brother played D&D, or he still plays, but I was visiting him at one point, and he's like, oh, there's a D&D game I'm a part of, and you want to come and play? And so I'm like, okay. So I went with him, and they handed me a character sheet with someone's character, like a player wasn't there, so they gave me his character to play. And I looked at the sheet and I was just like, what the heck is this? Like, I was like, what are these numbers? What is all this stuff? Like, I just did not understand it at all, like at all. And then the people around me started like role playing and doing weird stuff, and I didn't understand it at all. And I literally just like sat there and I put the character sheet down, and I'm just like, okay, this isn't my thing. But everyone else enjoyed themselves, but I just kind of was there. And the Dungeon Master caught on pretty quick and just kind of skipped over me. Like, it was like the character wasn't there. So I was like, okay, well, this stuff isn't like my thing. It's a certain way. My brother thought that I would really love it because I'm so into acting, and I went to like school for acting, and I've been in theater my whole life. And he's like, it's just like acting. It's just like, you know, just be a character. And like, that's not what it was. It was like this, but anyway, so that was like my first introduction to it. And then I forgot about it. I don't know what age I was, 13 or something when this happened. And then I met you, and you started a game, and James started a game. And I decided, because I wanted to be around you, that I would just kind of sit with you while you played and I would observe. But I still had this like, you know, this isn't kind of for me, so I'm just going to watch and support you or whatever I was doing there. And eventually I was pulled in because I was invited so much. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to make the easiest possible character. So I made a barbarian. And I'm just like, okay, if I'm a barbarian, I don't have to do anything complicated. I literally just like hit shit and rage. And so I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. But It turns out that my character was more complicated than I thought, because she was a completely neutral, like, character. And I tell James this all the time. If you asked me what was going on with the group in that campaign, I would not be able to tell you, because my character was there for her complete own reasons. Like, she was not invested in what the group was invested in at all. She's kind of using the group to get what she wanted. So it was awesome. But then that campaign, like, died out. And so fast forward, I don't even know how it started, but we just decided to start a campaign, James and I, just to have fun and to pass time. And it turned into this thing where just the story, the characters, my character, just all of it kind of took us over. And we literally just, anytime we had free time, this is what we did, you know. And we didn't watch TV together or, you know, whatever. We'd get food and dinner and then we'd play D&D together. And so we just, we'd play D&D together for like hours and hours and hours. And it's why, even after 2 years, I'm such a high level character, is because it's kind of what we do in our spare time and as a couple, but also just as creative people creating the story. Not to say I'm like super creative or whatever, but and so eventually at a certain point, I felt like the story is really important, and that's why I decided to rewrite it, is because at least to me, the story has impacted me a lot and the characters. And other than that, decided I wanted to Dungeon Master, so James kind of helped me put that together with different players. And what else am I doing? Is that kind of answer?
Well,
me?
Yeah, that covers the player thing a little bit. Yeah, I've ran really 3 full-blown campaigns since I've played. One was when I was a teenager, one was when I was in my late 20s, and one was with her, and that's a one-person thing, but I run a lot of characters in it. And yeah, it's been a lot of hours. She's level 26. And it's not that I just quickly advance her. We just have poured a boatload of hours into it. And I know a lot of people don't like high level play, but it's challenging, but I really enjoy it. And I've only ran campaigns to like 8 or 9. So I've never even experienced all the stuff I've been doing with her, gods and arch devils and demon lords and all that fun stuff. But so talk to me a little bit about the dungeon mastering, like how that happened and how it's been going, and what do you think of it and all that?
I mean, again, I don't really know quite how it happened. I just know that I DM'd you a couple times, and I just decided I wanted to DM a group. And so it was just you and Chris. But then we got 2 other people involved. And that's been interesting. Being a dungeon master is very different than being a player. And I know that I had a story idea. I was like, oh my God, I love this story idea and I want to do it so bad in a campaign. And so that was my initial thing. And then quickly I realized, oh shoot, this isn't going to work like long term. Like there has to be other, like, you know, it can start from this, but so for me, it's been learning a lot about my creativity, a lot about working with other people, because I have certain things that I respond to as a player, and I soon realized that those things that I respond to may not be what the players respond to. So I've been trying to kind of figure out how to tell my story and be the kind of storyteller I am, but still work with people that may not be so a certain way or that sort of thing. So to me, I'm completely new still. Even after a year of doing it, I'm still really trying to learn how to do it. I'm trying to learn how to incorporate the skills that you guys are learning as you're getting kind of higher level, and being able to not railroad you, being able to let you kind of have your power, but still have it be challenging. And so there's a lot to think about, you know, because if it's just easy for you, then it's not going to be fun at all. But at the same time, how hard is too hard? I mean, at this point, I'm literally finding things that might kill you, because I'm like, every time I put something that I think would be hard, you just completely destroy it, like completely destroy it. So anyway, with dungeon mastering, it's just a process, I think. I think the only way to learn to be a Dungeon Master is to do it. And you can observe anyone, you can observe any Dungeon Master, but really to learn you have to do it, because there's no other way. And you're also really vulnerable, because you're like the whole world, you know, you're like the whole world, and you're kind of putting yourself out there. I mean, we were watching Take 20, and just like, how invested as a Dungeon Master you have to be, even if the players aren't, how invested you have to be in your story, even if the players are kind of like just wanting to be silly or whatever. And it's difficult because you're like in this deeply emotional state, and it may not be that way for who you're telling it to, but it's a trip. Honestly, it's a trip being a Dungeon Master, but I understand why people like it. Personally, I think I prefer being a player a little more, just because I'm very singular minded. I don't know if that's the right term, but I really get lost in like one subject at a time. That's not necessarily true because I like so many different subjects, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, anyway. Yeah, you're into a lot of things, but when you're focusing on one, you're really into that one thing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. The I'm trying to think with that. So then, yeah, I mean, it's been great for me because I've been primarily a Dungeon Master, and I've played been a player a little bit here on the online games, and they haven't really worked. But because she wanted a DM, and I've had an opportunity to be a player. I'm level 8 now, which is the highest player I've ever been, because I've never been a player in a lot of, and I noticed over time, Dungeon Mastering is my thing. I like creating the world. I like playing all the different voices, all the different classes, all the characters. But there's another part of me that just loves being a player and not being responsible for all that and really be able to get into a single player. But I can tell already, it's like, oh God, I want to really be in the mood for a barbarian, or, oh, I want to play a ranger, and I'll like create characters that I'm end up not using. But when I go back to running her game, I get to be every class again, except for not a lot of druids. But okay, and then the last thing. Now you said you're writing a story based inspired by the campaign that we've been doing. Where are you at with that right now? Like on the first book or on the first what you're doing? Where are you at?
Well, I've been writing it. My first post because I'm doing it on like a blog kind of setting to help me kind of do it that way to store it or whatever. I think was October of like 2 years ago. I think it was October of 2018 is when I did the first post about it.
Yeah.
And I think I'm only on like the 16th post.
Yeah.
From now. And it's definitely something I want to be able to do more frequently and work on more. It's just sort of, it takes a lot of work. And like for me, writing is not necessarily easy in regards to that. It takes me a long time, and I kind of edit as I go, and it's difficult for me to just like write and then not to edit things. And even then it's going to be like a first draft, and I'm going to have to rewrite it all once I'm done with like the first draft of it. So it just takes a long time for me. And also everyday life stuff happens too. So I'm not like completely far into it, you know, like I'm into the first couple of sessions that we had, honestly, in our campaign, but I'm loving retelling it. I'm loving retelling it and talking with you about maybe the changes we could make to make it a better story in a novel type setting. I'm loving kind of having the first feelings of meeting some of these characters for the first time again. And, you know, I want to put more time to it. I'm at the beginning stages of it. I'm at the very beginning stages of it, even though I've been working on it for like 2 years. But I mean, this is what's going to happen. I mean, I've already decided that I'm going to write this story, even if it takes my whole life, into novel form. Because this story to me has like impacted me a lot. And it's because of my character. The characters in it, because of how you tell stories, it's just really impacted me. So I just made the decision to write the story, and you know, whatever. And if we have to change something because Wizards of the Coast won't let us use something, then whatever, we'll just use it. But the soul of it is really, really what I wanted to capture, and the soul of the characters. But yeah, I like writing in general. I went to school for writing too, but it's, you know, something I'm passionate about. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Okay. No, it does. Being the DM and the creator of a lot of the characters around you and the world around you, and then she's the main character. For me, it's been awesome to read these early posts, and you bring dimension to everything. Obviously, a lot of the little scenes are just didn't happen as detailed, but you're fleshing it out like a book, so that's it's like I'm getting everything. And I'm also, like you said, we're getting to revisit these characters. It's also kind of cool when you go back to it, when the campaign still going, to kind of revisit these characters and how she first met him and all that, the other, because I run like several NPC group members. It kind of, it also definitely affects how me getting excited about, you know, where we are. But I'm also really excited because I know everything we've done, even in the last 2 years, and I'm looking forward to actually see that become a book. And she's met now like four of her group members and something like that. And that's like, for me, it's exciting. And I know what comes next. I'm excited about it.
Also, just to mention it, I am kind of, as I'm going, trying to collect art, but I'm only doing it from one artist. So the art behind me is my character by one artist. And I would like more art, but I just found this artist and we kind of vibed, like you were talking about, Daniel. You know, and she did like a drawing. I can't even show you. It's okay. A drawing of Vilvin, who's my character, first, and I just, it like captured her to me. That's why I'm kind of sticking with her. And obviously, art's expensive too.
Because I'm going to edit this, I will throw in some art from some of your art, so you can just say right here, and I'll just
cool. Yeah,
I'll put that picture in here.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, not to go too far into my character, but you know, she's a warlock, and obviously every character ever in D&D is like troubled. troubled character, and sort of, you know, with warlocks, are they manipulated? Do they have free choice in coming to this being and getting power? Like, what is it that's really going on in this sort of transaction or whatever you want to call it? And her, you know, I went into being a warlock for particular reasons when I chose the class, but what it has evolved to is, to me, has been really interesting in the story. But yeah, there's a lot to any character, I think, but there's a lot to the character I created, and who she is. So I don't know.
You're gonna need lots of books. Yeah.
I got a quick question about the.
Yeah, Daniel. Any questions stuff you have?
Go ahead. I mean, I've been reading your posts ever since we had our last talk, and I really enjoyed them. But for anyone who does not know them, you already said you're writing them in a novella form, but are you putting those together in your like first person, like described as how your character is experiencing those things? Sorry, I'm stumbling over my tongue. Or is it more like a general story? Is it shifting characters? Is it more like a narrative kind of way? And as a follow-up for that, because yeah, I don't think that there is any character in D&D that comes from a happy sunshine rainbow background, because why would they change their way of life if it were so? What was the initial, what drove your character? What was the spark for your character to choose a pact with their patron? Because that's something that would interest me personally.
Yeah. So the first question, how I'm writing it is sort of, you know, it, like you said, it's kind of, sort of in novella form, but I'm going to, when I write the actual novel, it's going to be more of like a whole story. So it's going to be some working with it to like make it a continuous thing. Cause it's not supposed to be like an episodic type of thing. It's supposed to be a one story, like, you know, like a book, like a novel, like the Belgariad, or continuous story. So, like I said, I'm just sort of trying to get the characters, the ideas, the general storyline out there. But it's less of like, I'm going to do it first person. You know, it's not going to be like, she's my character speaking, like, I did this, I did that. I think it's going to stay kind of third person, just because I like that kind of thing more. And sort of that narrative and sort of having a narrator kind of narrate this kind of what's going through. But of course it's the first draft as well. So it's gonna have to be edited and be more descriptive and be more immersive. But it's definitely just the beginning stages of it. To answer your question, I'm sorry if I didn't answer it fully, but.
No, that's okay. Fine. That's fine.
And then in regards to the second question, it's sort of in the first kind of chapter I did of the prologue prologue. She's basically banished from the plane of water because she's a Genasi and she lives in the plane of water. And so she is sort of her patron comes to her right after that happens. And so there's sort of like a, maybe this is a opportunity kind of thing, or maybe I'm just depressed, you know, like it there's not like a reason, like he sort of got her in a really emotional moment, but she's also curious too, so there's definitely this, and I think this is just what it is with warlocks in general, there's sort of this power struggle going on between the patron and the warlock, because who is really in control in a way, like who's really, you know, the patron's in control, but they're getting power for doing like these favors or doing what the patron wants, but they're kind of getting powerful at the same time. So there's this like power kind of thing, power struggle, and her sort of relationship with her patron adapts as the story moves forward. But the initial thing is that she's just completely like freaking depressed and heartbroken from being banished and doesn't really know what else she's going to do. Yeah, by your father. She doesn't really know what else to really do. And also, she's curious about what this means. And not to go too far into the story, but she's sort of, and you know, every character needs to have flaws. She definitely has a thing with power. Like, she wants power. Not just magical. She wants power, like influence, even though she's not like an evil character. And she has sort of an ego a little bit. So it's definitely a power thing. But The first initial thing, I mean, she was just like a Genasi that had pretty much no power at all, that was banished, that was depressed, that was approached. And she decided to take that sort of leap. She didn't really know what she was getting herself into, honestly. So, anyway.
Yeah, and she was not accepted where she came from either. As it was, she was kind of an outcast in the plane of water. And the father wanted nothing really, basically, much to do with her. And then in the end, he banished her. And she was in really bad shape when the patron approached her, like you say, so. But yeah, I'll definitely put links for that too, the prologues. Anyway, maybe I'm biased, but I love it.
I'm curious, Daniel, is there a particular reason why you were asking about the structure of the writing?
There's actually two reasons, because I've been reading it. It has been some time since I read it, because I haven't caught up with it entirely, but after our last meeting, I started reading in it. That's one of the reasons, because I'm curious how things are progressing and if there's any changes and stuff like that. But also that's what sparked it initially. The first part is because I'm writing myself, as you both know. And it's always interesting to talk to other people who are writing about their ways and their methods and how they are approaching their writing processes. And of course, for people watching this and who have not yet read anything, who might get interested just by hearing about it.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Kinda,
yeah.
I know. There. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for that. Thanks for the question. But yeah, and just to talk about D&D in general, you know, I am grateful, very grateful that it entered my life again and that I kind of took a second look at it. Because as we were talking before, I take D&D really seriously because it's, you know, story, because of all the other reasons that we spoke about, but also because I think it's a really powerful thing. Like, it's a powerful tool for good, and I think it really can be used that way. It can be used for a lot of things that are not even, people haven't even thought of yet. People use theater for therapy, and I think that D&D can be used for therapy as well. I think D&D can be used for a lot of things and even to explore issues on a social level, you know, because you take yourself out of it and you're a character, you can explore things that you haven't ever explored before. And, you know, not everyone's going to agree with me on this, but for me, I want the world of that I build to be inclusive of everyone. So, like, in the actual world that I build as a dungeon master, it has to include people of every race, of, you know, every world, the real world of race. It has to have Black people, it has to have Asian people, it has to be inclusive. It has to have people who are bisexual, it has to have people who are gay, it has to have people who are straight. There has to be, you know, even though it's a medieval world, even if it's not
that's just a typeset, basically.
Yeah. There still has to be conversations. Like, there's just no way people are going to feel included if they're not included in the world that you're building. Mm-hmm. And that's just like a bigger narrative of kind of creation today, and even films and writing and everything, is that people have to feel included. And it's difficult, because how can you include everyone? But it's definitely, I think it's there, because you're building a world. You can have people who are maybe righteous and don't agree with these sort of subjects in the actual game, and the person that doesn't agree can, like, relate to the people in the game, you know. So it's to me, it's really, you know, I don't want to be like so profound, but it's a really important platform that can be used for a lot of good. And I didn't know this, you know, I didn't know this when I first joined it, but there's also people who I know who are in it, and they literally just have the best time, and they laugh, and they hang out with friends, and it's a really, it makes their life better, even outside of, even outside of maybe these deeper issues. They can just, like, make jokes and laugh and circumstances, but I'm really honored to be a part of the community because of James, yeah. Honestly. So I
totally agree on that. It's like, I'm having like 2 monthly games, and it's at the moment, given the general situation, it is maybe mostly some sort of escapism. Even though they are all fast friends that I'm playing with, and I'm happy to see them on a monthly basis because we're all in different countries. But yes, it is. People can laugh and can be somebody else or be themselves and just have a good time and just have all their woes put aside for just a little while, just for a few hours at a time. And it is therapeutic. And as you said, about this trying to, or as you endeavor to create your setting to be wholesome, inclusive, I agree. Many people will say that this is something that is not logical and doesn't work and stuff like that. But it is, there's two things. It is your setting, so you're making the rules, even though it is medieval. You can still pick how people lived back then, but just have it be some form of utopia. And the second thing I think, which makes it very interesting, is every utopia has at least one person who thinks that things could be better if they were just a little different. I think that is which makes it very interesting, because if you have a place that is working like a Swiss clockwork, it is perfect in its wholesomeness, and there's just one grain of salt in one gear, that creates tension, that creates conflict, and that is the spark that can be, which I'm sure what you're using to make things interesting. Because if a perfect utopia would be bland to some extent, if everybody were happy and had sunshine every day, just like I said before, every character in D&D has some kind of bad backstory, because if they had the perfect life, why would they go off adventuring? Would be idiosyncratic.
Other than maybe they're just bored. But generally people have issues. Yeah, the character is so bored of the perfect life. I want some flawed reality.
I want to earn it.
But honestly, there is like, you know, there are people who, yeah, there's a longing for meaning. I mean, in a world like that, there may not be meaning as much.
Yeah, true.
And so, yeah, and I mean, even people that may have a happy background can feel maybe a little bit lost in the happiness. So, you know, it's just a story, you know, it's just stories. I mean, and it's just something that helps, you know, it's like, it goes into the bigger question of like, why are we here in the first place? You know, like, why are we all, you know, it's
have a few more minutes.
No, I'm just saying it's such a thing, you know, this is like human life and humanity and relating to each other and stories, you know, and stories. I mean, people are drawn to stories. It's why we watch TV. It's why we like TV shows. It's we like stories, and it's because it reveals something within ourselves and the deeper parts of ourselves. I mean, even when we watch TV that may not seem important or seem, you know, impactful, we're relating to it in some way. I don't know. It's really deep. But yeah, in regards to me, I just love being part of the community. I love my character. I love writing about the story. I love being a DM. And to me, it's pushed me out of my comfort zone, and helped me be more creative, and it's helped me understand things better. It's helped with therapy. To me, it's been a huge positive in my life in a lot of ways. I mean, that's all I can really say.
And that's the co-host of the show. You have a glimpse inside. No, I really appreciate it, Kate. I wanted to interview you at some point, and it just worked out. This is a good time for it, so I really appreciate you opening up about that. And Daniel, awesome, but I really kind of feel like we're going to probably have to get you back on here, because we could talk forever, and so it's easy to throw in another patch of ever. And then keep, and then also you can keep us abreast of what's going on and everything that you're doing, because I would like to know personally about what's going on with everything that you're doing. Sounds really interesting. Huh? Yeah, like, what is that? Looks like a head.
That is where all the magic happens.
That's your world?
I was
thinking it would be.
It's part of it, because I can't make it, I don't know. I was pressed for time, I couldn't make it fit the screen. there's a small cove somewhere down here, and it goes on up there. But I'll
that's awesome.
Get you I'll send you the links to the Kanka document. It is public, so everybody can view anything that's in there. There's lots of stuff that is just placeholders at the moment, because as I said before, I'm currently in the process of digitalizing all the information and at the same time editing it so that it makes sense. So lots of stuff might take a little longer. I've already put in the first bigger plot hook that can be used as a one shot, for example. There's more and more lore is a very important part for me, and I'll get you some of the I'll get you something without me in front of it. So you can maybe put it into the video as well. And
yeah, you can send me. Yeah,
I'll just get you all the links.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would. I don't know. Maybe at some point we'll get a chance to kind of talk about your world a little bit. But at the same time, maybe the best way is the way you're talking about through the link. But anyway, we'll see. Like I said, I foresee more conversations with you. But thank you again to both of you. And for you, those that are watching, and if you are interested in, you know, maybe being on, if you're a player, DM, create content creator, that, or make dice or whatever, or one or all or whatever. I haven't really put an open call out there. I've been kind of reaching out to certain people so far, but still, send me a message and all of the links are below. And that way, if we come across where we need somebody or want somebody, maybe we'll put you on here. And but I thank you both for being part of episode 2, and I'll now edit it together and get it on YouTube and all that. And so really, Daniel, you're an awesome, awesome person and guest, and it's just cool to know you. So we'll definitely have more involvement with you in one form or another. But all right, that's it. Thanks for checking out Dragon Riders. Dragon Rider. Yes, Dorgan means dragon. It's all an ego Dorgan thing.
Dragon Riders.
I am a dragon rider. But so are you. No. But anyway, thanks for watching Dragon Riders episode 2, and look forward to the next one.
Thanks. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you both. And yeah, anytime. I'll gladly just sit and chat with you. Doesn't have to be anything particular. I really appreciate the invite and the time. So yeah.
Welcome in.
Hopefully very soon again.